Good morning and welcome. We thank everyone for coming this morning. It's my pleasure and privilege to introduce Mrs. Molly Brofsky. She's a senior faculty member and director of the Shana Bet program at Michlelet Mevaseret Yerushalayim. She has more than 20 years of experience at post-high school seminaries, both within and beyond the frontal classroom, in various capacities concerned with the educational, emotional, and social well-being of the students. Mrs. Brofsky holds an undergraduate degree in philosophy and Jewish studies, a master's in Jewish philosophy from Bernard Revel Graduate School, as well as a master's in social work from Wurzweiler School of Social Work. Mrs. Brofsky currently runs a clinical practice in Yerushalayim and Gush Etzion. Mrs. Brofsky has published and lectured extensively on Jewish thought and education, on issues of emotional health, and on the interaction between the two fields. I'm privileged to introduce our presentation today, Creating Healthy Communication with Our Children, Our Students, and Each Other. Two models from David HaMelech's wives.
Good morning. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here at this conference, which is meant, as I understand it, to foster good, healthy relationships and communication between parents and children and parents and teachers. And for me, one of the very major tenets of my philosophy is that to have a good relationship with the cornerstone to being able to raise your children effectively in the way that you want, or to maximize the potential of your students to the greatest possibility of what you're looking for, is if it's founded on a healthy and strong relationship. Healthy relationships are the keystone to growth, right? And therefore, the topic of healthy communication is, for me, really the heart and soul of effective chinuch, both for our children and for our students. And when I speak about this, I think for me, I personally find it to be a topic that's very important. It's not like I feel like I have all the answers. I feel like I'm a work in progress. We're all works in progress. And that's, for me, why it's so exciting to talk about a topic such as healthy communication, which I believe we can all improve on and be working on in our lives. Okay, so again, healthy communication, in my perspective, is what I would call the lifeblood of a healthy relationship. Why do I use that image, right? The same way the blood circulates within the body and makes the connections between the vessels and the organs and the whatever parts of ourselves need to be connected, right? The blood kind of, if you have a healthy circulatory system, right, the connections that need to be made will be made. The things that need to be removed from the system will be removed from the system. The things that need to be transported from one place to the other will be transported. And if you have a healthy circulatory system, you're going to have a healthy body. And so too with relationships. If you have healthy communication, you will be able to have a healthy relationship. Okay, so what I wanted to do this morning was take a look at two vignettes, I'll call them, from David HaMelech's life. Two conversations that he has that demonstrate, one is kind of a how to have a healthy communication and a healthy relationship, and one is kind of how to not have a healthy relationship, which we'll see in a second. Just before I start that, I just want to preface it with saying that I think it's very, I personally find it very inspiring that we can learn from David and from Tanakh, right, messages that are so relevant to our lives. And there's a very, very famous midrash about David HaMelech from Bereshit Rabbah that originally David was meant to not live. He was meant to die at birth. And Adam HaRishon saw this and decided to give 70 years off of his life so that David HaMelech could live for 70 years. And the question is, what's the message behind this midrash? What's the midrash trying to tell us? What I believe the midrash is trying to tell us is that essentially David HaMelech is Adam HaRishon. David HaMelech is man. He is every man. Okay? More than perhaps many other figures in Tanakh, when you learn about David, you're learning about a person who is extremely relatable, because he basically goes through the spectrum of every emotion, every human emotion that a human being can experience. Certainly we see that in Tehillim, right? If you look through the Mizmorei Tehillim, you'll see Tehillim that deal with anger, despair, joy, elation, disappointment, frustration, spiritual highs, spiritual lows, right? There's maybe no human emotion that's not in Tehillim. But what I also think is beautiful is that it's not just in Tehillim. If you read the story of his life and the experiences that David HaMelech had, you see that he also went through what all of us go through during the course of his life. Okay? So now I want to take two of these examples and see what we can learn from these two interrelationships. And again, I also think it's particularly nice when we can shed a light on some of the women in Tanakh, right? And here we're going to be focusing on two of David's wives, the first being Michal and the second being Abigail. Okay? So let's start. Well, let's, you know, start with the negative and move on to the positive. So let's start with David's relationship with Michal, the daughter of Shaul. Okay? Michal bat Shaul. Okay? So what's interesting is we only really have one. Michal and David were married for many years. We only have one instance where we actually see them talking to each other, which I don't think is coincidental either. But before we can get to that conversation that they have, that interaction, we need a little bit of the backstory on the relationship between David and Michal. Okay? So the story of David and Michal begins way, way, way in the beginning of David's kind of history, right after he kills Goliath. And he starts to fight for Shaul in Shaul's army. And Shaul immediately becomes jealous of David. Okay, that's what we're told. And then we're told a very interesting piece of information, which is the Pasuk says, Michal bat Shaul loves David. Vayahem Michal bat Shaul et David. Right, which is unusual because it's the only place in Tanakh where we're told of a woman who loves a man. It's the only woman we have in Tanakh who we're told of her emotional feelings for a man. Michal loves David. Okay, so that sounds wonderful. What's the tragedy? And indeed, the story of Michal is a tragedy. The tragedy is that it's not so clear that this relationship is a two-way relationship. Michal, in her history, no one really relates to her as a human being. Because what happens in the story? Michal loves David, and what does Shaul immediately say? Shaul says, great, what I'll do is I'll entice David to marry Michal, but I'll give him this tremendous task to fight 200 Plishtim, he'll die and I'll get rid of him. Okay, so Shaul uses Michal as a pawn to get after David. What does David say when he hears about this plan? It says, David is very happy, but what does the word say? It doesn't say lichatein b'michal. It says lichatein b'melech. David says, great, I'll marry the king's daughter, and I'm an ambitious person. Shaul was wrong. David did not have designs to be a traitor and kill Shaul and take over, but he definitely had designs of leadership. So what's more wonderful for me than to be married to the daughter of the king, right? So Michal was never seen as a person. She was always seen as a pawn, and this continues throughout her life. What ends up happening? Shaul wants to kill David. I'll just go through this very quickly. Michal helps David escape out the window. We don't hear David talking to her or thanking her or anything. We just see her helping him, and then he's gone. He's gone from her life. Shaul then takes Michal and marries her to another man to delegitimize David's relationship with her. And that man loves Michal, but again, we're not told how Michal feels about him. And then David later, when he reestablishes the kingship, after Shaul's death, he says to the family of Shaul, I need you to give me back my wife, Michal bat Shaul, but not because he's particularly interested in his wife. Why does he want Michal back? Because it's a sign that the family of Shaul agrees to let him be king. Okay, so again, this is a lot of technicalities, but it's worth mentioning because, again, poor Michal, right, everybody uses her as a pawn in their, not badly, there's no intention to hurt, certainly not from David's perspective. However, from her perspective, she's never really engaged in relationship. Okay, and then the now we'll reach the point where we can take a look at an actual conversation that happens between Michal and David. Okay, and we'll see what is the unfortunate consequence of this lack of relationship between Michal and David. Okay, so where is this story? This story is in Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. David HaMelech is basically, it's one of the high points of his life. He has established, he has taken over the kingship. He has captured Yerushalayim, okay? And he is finally bringing the Aron, the Ark, which has been taken from the Jews in way, way back in the time of Shmuel and had been exiled to the out of Israel, then it was taken back, but it had never been brought back to Jerusalem. And David decides, I'm going to take the Aron and bring it up to Yerushalayim, and what's his next thought? What am I going to do next? after I have the Aron in Yerushalayim. But the Beis HaMikdash, right? It's David's it's the high point of his life. He could not be happier, physically, spiritually, in relationship with other people. He's dancing, he's singing, he's completely joyous. Okay? And here we have an interaction with Michal. I'm going to read the psukim. I'll read them in Hebrew and then in English. Okay? So the first pasuk we have that mentions Michal is David is bringing up the Aron, and he's bringing Karbanot, and he's dancing, and he's singing, and everything is wonderful. Pasuk Tet Zayin. V'haya Aron Hashem ba'ir David, u'michal bat she'ol nishkefa ba'ad ha'chalon, v'ater et ha'melech David mefazes u'mekarker lefnei Hashem, v'tivaz lo biliba. Which means, okay, Shaul's daughter looked through a window and saw King David dancing and leaping before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. Vativez lo biliba. Okay? So what is Michal's feeling at that moment? Right? I don't know, what would be some words that you could use? She despised him. So we have here contempt, disgust, looking down upon someone, right? These are the emotions that Michal is feeling. Okay? So now we're gonna get to what are the don'ts, right? Okay? You're in a relationship. Something is upsetting you, okay? And I said before, right, if healthy communication is the heart of a relationship, so you have to learn how to communicate effectively, right? Because lack of confrontation, that's not going to be helpful either, right? I don't talk to the other. If we don't communicate, we're never going to have a relationship. Why don't people communicate? Like, if you have something that you don't want to speak, why do you hold it in? Because you're afraid, right? You're afraid that if I confront you, we're going to end up in a fight, I could end up getting hurt, right? So the first hallmark of healthy relationship is, can you create a safe space to communicate, right? Can you communicate from a place where everybody in the conversation feels not attacked, not judged, and safe within the interaction, okay? So why am I giving that introduction? Because if that's true, then what's extremely important? What's extremely important is the startup of the conversation. Okay? If you start with what John Gottman, who is the researcher on communication in relationships, what he calls a harsh startup, he says if you're going to start from a harsh place, you might as well turn around and leave, because he says that he can predict how a conversation will go within the first 3 minutes of interaction. If the first 3 minutes are harsh and negative, he says there's basically like a 96% chance that the conversation is going to keep going off the rails and derail. There's very little hope of saving that conversation. And therefore, if you're in a place of vativas lo biliba, if you're in a place of anger and contempt, maybe that wasn't the right time for Michal to do what? Go and talk to David, right? If you're feeling that, okay, the other example that is given, this is given by Professor Susan Heitler, she says it's like if you have a coffee kettle or a tea kettle on the stove, okay, and it starts to boil, and it starts to bubble, and it starts to, you know, whistle. So what do you do? What's the first thing you need to do? Turn off the fire. Take the tea kettle, take it off the fire, okay? And she said the same thing in a relationship. If you're starting a conversation, and you're feeling yourself bubbling and angry, and the flames are starting to come out of your ears and your nose, she said, physically, turn around and walk out of the room, right? That concrete, right? Don't have a conversation from that place. You cannot start a conversation when you're on fire. The first thing you need to do is turn off the fire, okay? So here's Michal's first no-no, which is she doesn't do that, right? She comes to David from this place of contempt. Okay, so let's just, in the interest of time, I go on. So they have this description of David, and David is so happy, and he's bringing Karbanot, and he's feeding the people, and he comes home, and the pasuk says he's come to bless his family. So how's David feeling? Good, wonderful, happy, right? Tired, exhausted. And now let's hear the conversation, okay? I just lost it. Okay. This is pasuk chaf. Vayashav David levarech et beito, vateitze Michal bat Shaul lekrat David, vatomer, ma nechbad hayom melech Yisrael, asher nigla hayom le'enei amahot abadav, higlot niglot echad harekim. Let me read the Hebrew, the English. Then David returned to bless his household, and Michal, the daughter of Shaul, came out to meet David, and said, okay, and this is what she said, how glorious was the king of Israel today, in that he uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids of his servant, and as one of the low fellows shamelessly uncovering himself, Right? What is she saying to him? Right? Well, literally what she's saying to him is, I don't think you behaved appropriately. Right? You uncovered yourself in a very not appropriate, not respectful way. But how does she say it? Okay? And here, again, it's like we're going to watch what John Gottman calls, he calls them the four signs of a negative interaction. He calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, because it's like, you know, one, two, three, four, boom, right? And that's it. Everything's over, right? So we start in here with horseman number one, okay? Which is what he calls contempt, right? What's contempt? Contempt is when you give a person a feeling that, well, before we talk about what contempt is, how does one express contempt? What are signs of contempt? So if you had to describe what Michal says, what, how is she talking? Oh, how glorious you were today. Right, what kind of language is that?
Sarcasm.
Right? There it is, right? Contempt, sarcasm, cynicism, eye-rolling, mocking, sneering, right? All of those behaviors are all hallmarks of contempt, okay? And contempt is the first horseman, because if you give a person a feeling of contempt, what are they? What message are they getting from you, right? Are they getting, I don't like what you did? No. What are they getting? I don't like you, right? It's not, I have a criticism of something, of a way that you behave. It's, I have a criticism of you as a person. You disgust me. I look down on you, right? And obviously, right, that is not going to help a relationship, right, move in the direction of connection, right? If what we want is healthy connection, contempt is going to be something that's going to push rather towards disconnection. Okay, so there you have horseman number one, contempt. Horseman number two is, okay, so I'm saying you can't, have contempt when you talk, but am I saying that you can't say what's on your mind? No, right? You need that healthy communication. Lack of communication is going to, we're going to end up with stagnation and no growth. So how do you, and how do you not phrase what it is that you want to say? Okay, so here we have the difference between criticism versus complaint. Okay, what's the difference between a criticism and a complaint? Right, a complaint is specific, right, about a specific behavior. It's often based in the I was unhappy when, right, and it describes the problem. So is Michal's statement a criticism or a complaint? What do you think? Criticism, right? Why? Because she's not, if she were complaining, what would she say? Something like, when I saw you dancing today, I found it a little bit lacking in modesty, right? That would be a complaint. Specific, what she saw and her concerns. What's a criticism? A criticism is when you go global, right? It's not just about that one specific event. It's about something much larger. Oh, you're just a nothing. You danced today like a empty person, a Hanari king, right? It's a character description, right? It's not just a description of one behavior. It's a description of an entire personality. That's a criticism, okay? What, and what's wrong with criticism, right? Why is criticism problematic? Right? Why is criticism, apocalyptic horseman number two? Because what it does is it shuts down the conversation, okay? If somebody criticizes you, are you going to come back with, oh, you're right, right? Oh, you're such a disgusting person, and you never, right? One of the ways that you can distinguish a complaint from a criticism, you never, you always. If you've got a global word like that, you never clean up after yourself. You always leave your shoes in the hallway, right? That's a criticism. A complaint is, today when I came home, your shoes were in the hallway. I would like them to be removed. So if you see a you never and you always, that's a criticism rather than a complaint. When you are attacked with a criticism, what is your response? Is it usually an apology? You never pick up your clothes. Oh, you're right, I'm sorry, I never pick up my clothes. No, what's the much more human response? Well, you never pick up your clothes either, right? Meaning when you are attacked, you defend. All right, or when I'm attacked, I defend. Right? So, and that's exactly what happens in this conversation, because what happens when David is attacked by criticism? He gets defensive. And what does he say? And again, just to save time, because we have 5 minutes and I want to get to Abigail. He says to her, okay, before the Lord who chose me before your father, right? What is he doing? He's turning around. Don't blame me. It's not me. It's you. Okay? It was before the Lord and before all his house. Therefore, I will play before the Lord, and I will be even less lightly esteemed, meaning I'm happy to behave this way, and let the handmaidens be very happy with my behavior. Okay? So that's called defensiveness. You know what, Michal? It's not you. It's not me. It's you. Right? I'm okay. You're not okay. And then what happens? Horseman number four, which is called stonewalling. Stonewalling is when you reach the point when somebody talks to you, and what is the other person? Stonewall. No conversation. Right? Lack of communication at all. Once there's been so much criticism, this defensiveness cycle, someone kicks in with a stonewall and just stops interacting. And how do we see that in our story? What's the last thing we're told? Michal Bat Shaul never had children till the day she died. Okay? And again, how do we understand that? Some people understand that as a punishment from God because of what she did. But I think a much more simple understanding is David and Michal never had a relationship after that. Right? They didn't communicate. There was a stone wall between them. And again, this image of Michal standing behind a window and seeing David and this wall between them, I think is a very apt image. And that's the tragedy of Michal. So now, in our last remaining 5 minutes, we can turn to a less negative story. Okay, so let's, again, review. Harsh startup, contempt, criticism, defensive with stonewalling. Those are the do-nots. Now let's end on a more positive note and take a look at the do's. Okay, what should one do in order to foster a healthy relationship? So here we have to go to the story of Abigail, who was the wife of Nabal HaKarmeli, and we're going back in David's history. Okay, so this story takes place while David is on the run from Shaul before he becomes king. And again, just to give a quick background, David is running away with his band of, they're basically refugees, right? They're all on the run from some type of, from the king for some reason or other, okay? And he spends the winter taking care of the sheep of this man named Nabal HaKarmeli. Now, why does he do this? So I think the most proper understanding of this story is that there was, and this, they actually found that there was this custom in the ancient Near East that there was always tension between the settlers and the nomads. Because if you were a settler or a farmer, right, and you had your sheep, often you'd have this marauding band of nomads that would come through, and what would they do? Take your stuff, steal your sheep, come and burn your house down and, you know, pillage, right? So what would sometimes happen? A band of nomads would make a peace treaty with a farmer and say, we'll protect your sheep from anybody else, but then when the winter's over, then I want you to pay us back with some of your stuff, right? When you shear your sheep, please pay us back. And that's what's happened between David and Nabal. Except that Nabal is not a very nice person, and after the winter, when David sends to him and says, hi, you've taken care of your farmers all winter, what does Nabal say? I don't owe you anything. Right, because there's no signed contract, right? But David has just put in an entire winter's worth of work, but Nabal is not a good person, and he says, I don't owe you anything, go sue me. Why can't David sue him? Because David can't go to the courts, because the courts are Shaul, right? And Nabal knows this.
Okay, so that's the situation that David is in, and David, as opposed to the story of Michal, where David started out joyous and elated, here we have the opposite scenario. David is furious. He literally has... He figuratively has smoke coming out of his ears and his nose, and he says, I am taking my sword, and we are going down to Nabal, and we are killing every man, and he says this, I'm going to kill every man, woman, and child of Nabal. I am not leaving him, even a small baby in the house. Literally, that's what he says, okay? Because he's so angry at what Nabal does to him, okay? So it's the opposite of the story of Michal. David is furious, and who stops him and who talks to him? Abigail. Okay, and now let's see how does Abigail prevents him from going on this rampage. How does she do it? Right? What are her skills? What are her communication skills that enable her to speak to David and have him hear her and appease him? And not only that, they end up having a very, very, very strong relationship from that moment on. So first of all, we're told about Abigail that she's tovat seichel, she's a wise woman, right? Which is, I think, very interesting, right? She's also beautiful, but more importantly, she's wise, okay? So David is coming down the mountain and he's got his sword out and he's about to kill people, and Abigail hears this, and this is what she does. She sends to David, before anything else, comes galloping towards David, donkeys laden with fruit and food, okay? And then she follows behind and she bows down to him. So what has she just done in terms of our conversation before about how the conversation starts? Instead of harsh startup, what has she done? She's introduced soft startup, right? Because the minute that here comes David coming down the mountain, and non-verbally, before Abigail opens her mouth, what has she done? She has soothed him, right? Because she sent him the money, first of all, and she's coming towards him from a place of, she's bowing down before him. It's conciliatory. It's respectful. So even before the conversation starts, we have soft startup. Okay? So that's the first wisdom of Abigail.
Okay, so now what I want to do is, let me just go through very quickly, here are the rules for positive communication tools, and then I'll read Abigail's speech and tell me whether she has them, okay? So what do you need? You need, again, we talked before about,
did we talk about speaking from I rather than speaking from you, right? It's always a healthier way. Talk about how you feel. Don't blame the other person. Talk about your own needs. Speak from I,
okay? So they're speaking from I. Be polite, be appreciative, be clear, describe. Instead of, you're such a mess, describe. I see clothing all over the floor. Be clear, don't ask the other person to be a mind reader. It's so messy in here and it's never clean. I would like it if every Tuesday when I came home, the table would be cleared, right? Don't expect your partner or whoever you're communicating with, your child, your friend, your teacher, your student, to be a mind reader, okay? Be polite, appreciative, describe, be clear, and speak from I. So I'm going to read you Abigail's speech and tell me or think about whether these things are the way that she communicates. Okay. So she falls down and she bows before him and she says, and I'll just read the English, "Upon me, my lord, upon me let this iniquity be." Right? What does she start with? Me, I'm speaking from I, okay? "And let thy handmaid speak in thy ears and hear the words of thy handmaid." I have something to say, right? I'd like it, I would appreciate it if you would listen, okay? "Let not, my lord, I pray thee, take heed of this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name and folly is with him," because the name Nabal means disgusting. So she's saying he's like his name, he's not a good person, right? "But it's my fault. I, thy handmaid, did not see the young man of my lord who thou didst send." Right? So it's my fault. I should have fed you and I didn't. Okay, so far she's been polite, appreciative, speaks of herself, and clear. Okay? And now she's going to add another facet. Okay? And with this point, we'll end. Okay? "Now therefore, my lord, as the Lord lives, and as thy soul lives, seeing the Lord has prevented thee from coming to shed blood, and for by avenging thyself, now let thy enemies be as Nabal." I'm going to just skip a little bit because the language is a little bit dense. But basically what she says to David is this. She says, "David, don't kill Nabal. You want to be the king, right? One day Hashem is going to, I believe, says Abigail, I believe that one day you will be king. So don't right now do something that's going to be the opposite of what you want for yourself, right? Meaning you don't want to be king through immoral behaviors. You want to become Hashem's appointed only through proper actions. So if you kill Nabal right now, that's not in your interests, right? Does that make sense? Is that clear? I'm just trying to say it very quickly. But it's not in your best interest to kill Nabal because at the end of the day, murder is murder, right? But what's so fascinating, and at this point will end, okay? What she does is she differentiates between facts and needs or wants. Okay? Usual fights are about the facts. It's too hot in here, it's too cold in here. It's too hot, it's too cold, it's too hot, it's too cold. Is that how the conversation going to get anywhere? No, because it's a fact. It's either right or wrong. That conversation will never get anywhere. What if you change it from facts to needs? I feel cold, I need to feel warm. I feel warm, I need to cool off. Okay, you can find some solutions. You can wear a sweater, you can go by the window, I can put the fan over your bed. But once you clarify the needs, it's much easier to come to a solution. Okay? So that's one thing Abigail does, and that also puts them on the same team. It's not you versus me. I'm right, you're wrong. It's hot, it's cold, we're fighting. No, we're on the same team. We want the same thing. We want both people, right, to go to the hot and cold analogy, to feel comfortable. I want you to feel comfortable, you want me to feel comfortable. We're on the same team. How can we accomplish a common goal? And that's what Abigail does. Because she doesn't say to him, you shouldn't kill Nabal. And then you can say, I should kill Nabal. No, you shouldn't. Yes, I should. That conversation doesn't
sorry, David. You don't have a contract. You're right morally, but you're not right legally. All right? Chazal put those words in Abigail's mouth, but not in the text. She doesn't do that. She doesn't go to the conversation of facts. Is it right or wrong? Right? What would a judge say? She doesn't go that way. She goes the direction of needs. And being on the same team, David, you and I want the same thing. What is it that you want? You want to be king without any moral blemishes on your character. I want to not die, right? But essentially, we really want the same thing, which is for you to do what's really right, right? I'm on your side, David. I believe you're going to be king. I believe that this is eventually going to work out well for you. And we both want you to achieve that end through only most proper behavior, right? And so by framing it in terms of their needs and by framing it in terms of being on the same team, Abigail really speaks to David and gets him to put down his sword. And what does he do? He stops and he says, wow. And he says, you know, if you hadn't come and talked to me, I was going to kill his entire homestead and all these people. And then he says the most beautiful word. He says, Ubaruch ta'ameh ubrucha'at. Blessed is your wisdom, right? Your taste, your tact, your good understanding, and blessed are you. And then she says to him, yeah, we're done. And then she says to him, and you know what? Next time when you see me, don't forget about me. And eventually they get married. So this conversation, not only did it not end up in a confrontation, but it fostered and strengthened their relationship. But just to close, right, if we want to have healthy relationships, these are the things we have to foster. Okay? Again, polite, appreciation, all of that stuff, speaking from I, but I think the most important message is identify the needs rather than the facts and come from the place of being on the same team. And I'll end there so that we can move on to the next lecture and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very, very much. A lot of very meaningful takeaway messages. Thank you.
Okay.